8:11 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. In the studio from Summit Land Conservancy, I have Director Cheryl Fox. She's joined by Land Protection Specialist Brett Denny. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Cheryl, let's first talk about the hunting and possible poaching taking place in Round Valley. I think we all thought that that is protected open space. Apparently, that's not the case from the Division of Wildlife Resources.
Well, it is protected open space. The laws around hunting are a little bit interesting. It's one of the reasons that I wanted Brett Denny to be here as our land protection specialist. I thought maybe Brett could explain the laws, a little more clearly.
Okay, so Brett, DWR says that they have issued 40 permits to hunt elk there on that property. We have apparently a jurisdictional discrepancy here.
Yeah, that's kind of a not really the best way to describe where those tags are for. They're for the whole Wasatch Salt Lake unit. And so when the DWR issues a tag, it's for a large, hundreds of thousands of acres of massive units. But that doesn't necessarily mean that all of that unit is huntable. So private lands and municipalities like Park City, where discharging a firearm is not permitted, are areas that you are still not allowed to hunt if you have a tag for that larger unit.
Yeah, so do we have the property posted no hunting? Should people know that there's no hunting allowed in that? I don't know, how many acres are we talking about in Round Valley?
It is. At all the trailheads, there are very clear no hunting signs. And it's the responsibility of the hunter to check where they're going and looking at how the incident happened. It seems pretty clear that since an elk was left out in the field, that they likely knew that they were in the wrong.
Okay, so what we've got now is more of a poaching incident as opposed to a hunting incident?
Yeah, there's multiple crimes that were likely committed out there. So since the area where the elk were found is within the Park City municipality, there is no discharging of a firearm allowed in that area. And then there's also the consideration of wanton waste laws. So the elk that was left out there was a violation of Utah hunting code that you can't leave game in the field. And that likely happened because the people knew that someone had seen them and that they needed to get out of there before being found.
Ah, okay.
But it's still under investigation, so.
Yeah, and how many are we talking about? I mean, I've heard between one and three.
Yeah, so there were two elk. Some of the pictures that were taken by the public kind of made it look like there may have been three, but that was just two of the same elk. One of the pictures was from before the Division of Wildlife got up there and was able to do a necropsy and then move the elk. So it looked like it was in a different place, but it was two elk. One was taken and loaded up, and the gut pile was the only thing that was left there, and then the other one was left the whole carcass.
Okay. So how do we move on from here? Do we need to do a better job with no hunting signs? I mean, I don't know that it's happened before, so this might be the first.
It has happened before. Mm-hmm. There have been other reports of, I know people have called Mountain Trails saying, hey, there's somebody dragging a carcass out of Round Valley. It's been a couple of years since it happened. And of course, it's hugely concerning because of the public recreation that's out there. And public recreation is what the conservation easement protects. So public recreation can encompass a lot of different things. We are concerned when those different things come into conflict. For example, skate skiers and hikers, right? So obviously the potential conflicts with hunting and people out hiking or walking or skiing, those potential conflicts are a lot more disastrous. I think that what's interesting about this conversation, because we've had it before, is that hunters are largely required to know where they can go. And when they don't, it becomes an issue of sort of conflicting jurisdictions. And I think that probably worked when there were only about 1 million people living in Utah. But there are a lot more of us here now. And I know in the past I've heard people say that, you know, they used to go hunt with Grandpa in Round Valley 50 years ago. Well, that's great 50 years ago. Now it's a little bit of a different situation. So there are a lot of responsible hunters out there who take the time to figure out where they are permitted and not permitted to go. And most of them are responsible. And in fact, there is an incentive, right, Brett, to report. If you're a hunter and you find somebody doing something illegal and you report them.
Yeah, there's an incentive for, you can get a tag for the next year in that unit. And so it's oftentimes hunters in the field that are reporting violations of hunting laws. But it is, again, like Cheryl said, the responsibility of the hunter to know where you can and can't go. And I know that the guys at the city are constantly getting calls from hunters asking, hey, can I go out in Round Valley? And the answer is no. And so it's an incident, I guess, of people not taking the responsibility to look into the laws and abide by them.
We would like anybody who might have been in that Old Ranch Road area on, I think it was the Saturday before New Year's, the Saturday between Christmas and New Year's, if they saw anything, please let us know or let the city know, because this is really, it is an issue, it is a problem, and it is possible that laws were broken.
And it's also important to note that DWR officers are usually very reasonable people, and mistakes happen. And I know that when hunting violation laws are prosecuted, that the people that come forward and say, "Hey, I was in the wrong here. I didn't realize this was an area where you couldn't hunt," and come forward and be honest about it. Those people usually get reduced charges and will have a much, much easier time dealing with the consequences.
Okay, we need to move on. River Bend Park, the Summit Land Conservancy purchased an easement on this property. Where are we talking about?
It's adjacent to the new campground that Oakley has built in next to the rodeo grounds out in Oakley. And the campground is great, but it does not have access to the Reba River. So we are working and have been working with two different landowners and the city of Oakley and Summit County to acquire this. It's about 4 or 5 acres, so that people from the campground will be able to actually have access to the river. So it's a couple of different steps. The first step was to purchase the easement, which we did in December. And now the next step is to actually raise the money to buy the land. So the land is much, the price is reduced pretty considerably because the development rights have been stripped. So we need to raise about $140,000 more. We currently have a matching grant from doTERRA. We're getting to the end of that because we did get a fine number of gifts over the course of the holidays. But if people want to donate, they can go onto our website at wesaveland.org, and you can designate Oakley or Riverbend. We're calling it Riverbend Park on our website, and the donation will count towards that and to our challenge grant.
So doTERRA, that's an odd contribution?
I think there is some personal interest in that area from some of doTERRA's ownership and management.
Okay. And why does it seem like that the only place that we buy property is in Oakley?
That's right? A good question.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we bought Stevens Grove.
We have to. That's a really great question, Leslie, and it's actually something that the Summit Land Conservancy's board has been looking at. You know, our focus area, our primary area to save land is Park City and Summit County. And in North Summit, Colville, Hennifer, Wanship, those areas, we're finding landowners who are willing to sell us a conservation easement, which is obviously cheaper. Those people have the next generation coming up who want to continue farming and ranching. And in South Summit, we just haven't found that same level of interest for conserving land through the sale of a conservation easement, which means that if we want to save it, we have to buy it. So that's what we're doing.
Okay. You also finished an easement in Hennifer, again, an easement, so you didn't have to purchase the easement. 90 acres?
That's right. And the landowner made a terrific donation in that situation. And we're actually working with him on another project that hopefully we'll be able to announce pretty soon.
Okay. And do you have the details on the full moon adventures that you've got coming up?
The full moon, the next one will probably be Friday, February 7th. We are encouraging people to like our Facebook page, which is We Save Land. And they can see a lot of different kind of fun activities that we have out there. And sometimes Brett even goes along and leads them. And he is a former World Cup Nordic combined racer. So we have good expertise out there.
Okay. Cheryl, Brett, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:23. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Summit County Council meets for the first time this decade, this evening, at the third annual legislative reception that'll be held in Colville at the Ledges Event Center. In the studio with a preview of that, as well as Wednesday's first meeting of the year, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us about tonight's reception. Who's coming?
Well, we've invited and gotten confirmations from all of our local legislators. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that they will come. Of course, you know, their schedules are very variable, and we know kind of the hour before who's going to show up. But, you know, what we enjoy about it is it's an opportunity in a little bit more relaxed environment to hear what their priorities are leading into the session, what they think is going to be hot items. And then we can talk to them about a few things that are coming up for us.
So is it done kind of on an informal social basis, or do you all kind of sit down and have a roundtable discussion or something?
Well, we actually have a dinner for them, and so it's a little bit more informal, but we have some presentations that we do. We give each of them a chance, a few minutes to talk about what their priorities are and what they see coming. So probably a little bit more informal, but, you know, it's a publicly noticed meeting. Anybody that would like to show up and listen, we'd love to have you there.
Okay. The council, that's happening again tonight. What time?
It starts at,
I'll find that out. Yeah. I don't have the agenda in front of me. Sorry. Let's see. The council meeting on Wednesday, 3:15 at the county courthouse in Colville, likely appointing Doug Clyde as the new chair.
5 p.m., by the way. I just looked it up.
Okay. And then at 4:15, the endorsement of the first resolution of the year, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. This is a national carbon tax to deal with the effects of climate change?
That is correct. So, you know, there's been several proposals out nationally for different kinds of carbon taxes. This one is a bipartisan proposal. Three Democrats, three Republicans from the House of Representatives that have put this forward. The only difference to this one, well, there's a lot of differences to all of these proposals, but this one would allow some of the revenue to come back to taxpayers as dividends.
Sort of like what Alaska residents get from drilling and pipelines?
Similar. Of course, the tax, part of the purpose of it is to raise the cost of those things that cause greenhouse gases put a disincentive to using those over alternative means of getting energy. It puts the whole idea of bringing the revenue back to taxpayers is in order to allow more money to flow through the system and create jobs and create economic activity. There's been a previous proposal called the Baker proposal that did something similar. This one is a little bit more aggressive on its growth of taxes on those carbon producing items.
Any idea what this dividend might be?
It's hard for me to say. I'm not an expert on this, but it would be interesting to follow as Congress takes this up.
And are other government entities in Utah being asked to sign as well?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that our council was approached by local groups like the Clean Energy Group in Utah, so I'm assuming others have as well.
So have any devil in the details analysis has been done? For instance, I mean, do we know what the cost impact on tourists to fly to Salt Lake to ski in Park City are?
You know, I was just reading an analysis by Columbia University on this, and no, there hasn't been a deep analysis done of this. Yes, it's a very new proposal. So, you know, I think we're going to hear more about it as time goes on.
Well, and we know that likely carbon-based materials used to make solar panels and wood turbines. So how does that all get offset?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it looks as if the tax is done close to where production happens. So the tax would happen at that point. Now, of course, taxes also sometimes get passed on as things go through the system of our economy. You know, as gasoline is refined or comes out of the ground, if it's taxed there, perhaps that cost is borne by a consumer somewhere else. So I think we'll have to look at those things.
There is a letter to Secretary Mike Pompeo saying that Summit County willing to do our part to resettle refugees. What's this about?
So this is another reaction to some policies on the federal level we have supported this type of activity in the past. Local groups are asking us to support this. This has been done. And other local governments have supported this in the area, as well as I believe the governor has supported this in a form. So Summit County has been asked as well, and this is our council's reaction to that.
So do you know who brought this to the county?
I'm not aware of who that is.
All right. And specifically, what is our part, the county's part?
Well, we don't know that yet. Until our area is approached with refugees to resettle. And that could be Utah, it could be the region, don't really know. Not sure how Summit County would participate in that, or entities within Summit County.
This is just basically a letter saying we are willing.
That's correct.
Recommendations for the RAP Recreation Committee for funding. 16 entities applied and are recommended for a total of some $465,000. There was a request from the Avalanche Center that got turned down. Any idea why?
You know, I just asked, our attorney's office early this morning because I saw that in the packet. I don't have an answer for that yet. I will by Wednesday. I asked them to give me an update on that. So I don't want to speculate on that.
All right. And then only two entities that we saw are recommended to get a lot less than they had requested. Park City Ice Arena for, I believe, display boards. And then the Utah Olympic Park, which is asking money for an expansion. Can the council change this recommendation?
Yeah, exactly. So the RAP, each of our RAP recommending bodies, the RAP Culture Committee and the RAP Recreation, their list of projects and recommended funding is just that, a recommendation to the council. So the council can change that. They haven't traditionally done so because these committees go through quite a rigorous process of interviews and looking at all these applications together. Do quite a lot of work to put those recommendations together. So, I'm sure there's, I'm going to allow the committees to brief those reasons to the council. So again, I don't want to speculate too far beyond what's in the packet, but I'm sure they have reasons for each of their recommendations.
Yeah. Is it appropriate then for these organizations to lobby council members?
I think, The process is the process. Our council members are always listening to our constituents. The work of the committees has been respected well by the applicants in the past, and that's the system that has evolved. But it has happened before.
Let's see. Of the funds, 48% slated for Snyderville Basin entities, 21% for Park City-based entities, and then lesser amounts on the east side. Do we try to do this on some kind of fair representation?
Yeah, it's really based on both a mixture of population, but also it's based on where the funding comes from. So the generation of that. So we try to honor those things, and you know the percentages change slightly over time. If you look back a few years, I think the Snyderville Basin had up to 50% of that generation, and now it's gone to 48. So they look at that generation each year to make sure that they're as close as possible.
Okay.
And sometimes there's a little manipulation in there based on the applications themselves. Like I think this year, South Summit might be getting a slightly higher percentage than they're supposed to be allocated.
All right. Also, just wanted to ask you about the first the fireworks on First Fridays. This is back, and I'm guessing something again that you approved.
I did.
Yeah. And again, let's talk just a little bit about that, about why we do allow that. I mean, we don't allow cars to idle, and I guess why if we're trying to be so sustainable and we don't want, you know, to pollute our skies, that we're allowing something like this to happen?
Well, I think it's a balance, right? There's certain times of year, like Pioneer Day, 4th of July, or Independence Day, that we almost encourage those types of things in some places, unless we have fire restriction reasons to do those. We're a tourist area, and this is a request by a private entity to what they call enhance their business. So we have to balance that against other things. Now, we don't have any prohibitions in place on fireworks in the county. There has not been a policy discussion about fireworks in relation to what you're talking about from the standpoint of, how it relates to emissions and those types of things. That discussion could be coming.
Yeah. And I guess we could put it back in Vail Resort's lap, too. I mean, they're also committed to zero emissions, and so why they're asking for it in the first place.
Exactly. It is a private entity, so they have internal policies as well.
Okay. Tom, anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think I have anything else right now. Just happy to get the new year started.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, you're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time now, 8:34. The Park City Planning Commission meets Wednesday for the first time this year. In the studio with a preview, I have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson along with Planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Let's see. The first item for the Planning Commission to consider is whether to amend the Land Management Code regarding affordable housing and master plan developments. This comes from recommendations from Cascadia Partners. The city had contracted with this organization to analyze the land management code. The council, Hannah, has heard these recommendations. This is the first time then for the Planning Commission?
Yes. So, like you said, Cascadia Partners made a presentation to city council regarding potential land management code amendments for affordable housing. And so city council gave direction in sort of two columns. One would be immediate changes that they find we can do right now, and the other are maybe more long-term and more community impactful ones that they want us to have a little bit more of a process on. And so what's in front of Planning Commission tomorrow are the immediate changes, and that's going to be allowing projects to go down to the zone-required setbacks if they're less than 2 acres, allowing affordable housing projects to have an open space reduction to 30%. And when I say reduction, I mean currently it's higher than that and they have to ask for the reduction. And so what we're doing is making it a standard that they only require 30% open space. And of that 30%, we want to see 15% of that to be usable. And so just to give a little context on usable open space, if you were to look at the Woodside Park Phase 1 project, that central sort of communal area is what we want to see in usable open space. We want usable open space to be available and accessible to everyone in a project. And then the last one would be, we're just going to be matching the parking requirements of affordable housing developments to that of all other projects in town. Currently, affordable housing projects have to provide one parking space per bedroom, and that ultimately becomes a lot more parking than what a normal person would have to require. And so we're just trying to make an even playing field. The longer term changes are potential height increases and parking reductions in general. And so we don't find that we're prepared to go forward with a height reduction or a height increase or parking reduction right now, because we want to have a much bigger community conversation about both of those.
Sure. What is the current open space minimum?
So if you're in the affordable housing project, I believe it's 60%. And so we're going down to 30. Now, mind you, all the current master plan developments, they typically go down to 45%. And so really what you're going to see in the master plan developments we are all used to seeing is you're only going to be seeing a 15% reduction in that. And this is for infill projects, so those that are 2 acres or less. So it'd be consistent with everything around it.
Okay. So, I mean, in terms of that, how much more square footage? I mean, how many bedrooms are we going to add on? Any idea, analysis of that?
Yes and no. And Hannah and I are working on the science of this. But for years, open space has always been regulated by how much ground coverage you have. But in reality, open space is related to the number of units you're putting on the site or the volume of the units. And so what Hannah and I are doing with the rest of her team is we're looking at the open space that the required setbacks already establish. And so if you were like me and hanging out in Park Meadows, the open space on a lot is roughly 40%. If you're in the historic district with the front yard setback, rear yard setback, side yard setbacks on a 25 by 75 foot lot, the open space is roughly 40 to 50%. So one of the things that the consultant did for the city that provided a whole bunch of clarity for us was our master plan developments are designed for projects of 2,000 acres, not 2 acres, right? And so we're trying to control that change. If we don't grant additional height, which is another whole long-term decision, you're not going to see a bunch of additional units in any one location, with this exception. What will happen is if you do the controller on master plan development is you're allowed to do smaller units, right? Like 500 square feet, 600 square feet, 700 square feet. So you may see more smaller units, but no additional building volume. Just like you see in the other affordable housing projects that we have, whether it's Woodside 1 or 1450, 1460. So the simple answer is there is no simple answer, but the building doesn't get bigger. You may see more smaller units inside of whatever building volume we deliver. And the open space is roughly going to drop down to what's normally allowed in the zone, right?
So the Planning Commission has made lots of exceptions for these requirements in the past, which, of course, is in their purview to do. But why change the code altogether? I mean, wouldn't it be better to continue how we've done it on a case-by-case basis?
No, I think the City Council wants to make the affordable housing process more accessible to the development community and with higher degrees of reliability. So it doesn't depend on my department, or it doesn't depend on the Planning Commission discretionary use. This becomes more reliable and less discretionary. That's what the council wants us to do.
So it sounds like it's also going to require more additional parking permits.
We're going to have to work on the parking situation, especially in the historic district. So Hannah's main work is related to being outside of the historic districts to make sure that we protect that particular section of town. And here's why. And I know we're kind of short on time this morning, but for the most part, the city has allocated a city resource to protecting historic structures and allowing parking in the rights of way for historic structures rather than requiring parking on site. So if you were building a new building, you'd be required to provide parking. If you're restoring a historic structure, you don't need to provide parking. So that's a resource the city has chosen to allocate. That's a limited resource, right? I mean, there's only so much right of way in that location, and that's one of the reasons we regulate some of the other issues like driveways.
All right, let's see. The State Health Department recently announced a medical cannabis distribution facility that they are calling a pharmacy. It'll be located just outside of Park City's limits. You were telling us, Bruce, that this is in Summit County's wheelhouse. Will the city's planning team be involved in this at all?
At this point, no. At the last city council meeting, we revised the codes for medical cannabis. So we have a location for it. But pharmacies are different than production facilities. So pharmacies can go in any one of the general commercial districts as long as they're away from parks and open space and schools, just like we would regulate a liquor store.
Okay, just kind of looking ahead for 2020, is this the year that the Twisted Branch subdivision stops being a continued item on the Planning Commission agenda?
Twisted Branch subdivision is well named. It will continue. Hannah and I and the rest of the planning team need to resolve the final sections of Flagstaff's historic preservation plan before Twisted Branch can move forward correctly. We're in that section of work. I think the key of that one is what we do at the Judge Mining and Smelting Building. It was established to be an adaptive reuse in the development agreement, and the historic preservation side of my shop are trying to figure out what in 2020 is a good adaptive reuse.
Well, the city was going to replace the roof there on that judge office building, the one we're talking about,
right,
in Park Canyon there. So it was discussed at a council meeting a couple of months, but that was before the snow. So are we?
I don't have a new update from just before the new year. My understanding was that the Master Owners Association had a contractor under contract to do that roof repair. But I think it's beholden on the historic preservation team to figure out what the long-term solution is for that building.
Finally, just wanted to ask you about Woodside Park Phase 2. Is that when does that get out of the appeals process?
Go ahead, Anna.
The Board of Adjustment will be reviewing that on January 21st. And so that is the next, that's the next item for this one.
Okay. Once they make a decision, then what?
Once they make a decision,
I mean, if they approve again the plan as is,
right.
It goes to council then for final approval?
No. Once Board of Adjustment takes action, that's the final action. But it can be appealed again, but it would go to court.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
No. Happy New Year. We're going to have some fun. So we look forward to it.
Okay. Bruce Erickson, Hannah Tyler, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:44. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:44. Good morning. Well, the annual Sweetheart Gala to support the Treasure Mountain and Park City High School bands has been pushed up a couple of years, weeks this year. In the studio with details about how to attend and support the fundraising efforts, I have band director Brett Hughes along with event chair Ricky Case. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Brett, you can maybe just give us when and where is the gala happening?
Yeah, so the gala is at St. Mary's Church again this year, and this year will be on Friday, January 31st. We did have to push it up a little bit because of some scheduling stuff this year.
Just with the church itself?
Yeah, the church's schedule's gotten more busy, and it traditionally had been the Friday before Valentine's Day, but with Valentine's Day on a Friday this year, it kind of threw our schedule into a loop, and so Friday, January 31st is where it landed.
Okay. It is a fundraiser. How much are tickets and what's included in that?
The tickets are $60 and up. That is for standard seats. We also have premium seats. Those are closer to the dance floor. And the tickets can be purchased online at pcbands.net.
Okay. And in terms of what the tickets include, dinner?
Yeah. So there's... The highlight of the evening obviously is 3 hours of live dancing to the music of the Varsity Jazz Ensemble from Park City High School. And a lot of people don't understand that the Varsity Jazz Ensemble is, they're an incredibly high caliber group. People leave the gala every year and they're like, oh, I had no idea they were this good. And they really are. So 3 hours of dancing, live dancing to the jazz ensemble, a 3-course catered dinner from Rockwell Events Catering, and then... there's opportunity drawings and silent auction. The inclusions of the ticket are definitely the dinner and the dancing.
Okay. What's the opportunity drawing that we're...
We have both a silent auction and an opportunity drawing. The silent auction we have online, which can also be accessed from our website. And then the day of the gala, we convert that to a paper and pencil auction because people really enjoy bidding in person, and then those prizes are available that night. We also have opportunity drawing. Those tickets are $5 each, and those tickets are bought at the gala, and we have a number of packages. I think it's like 30 or so different packages, and the way you do it, you just put your ticket in for the package that you would like to win, and then we draw the winner that night, and you go home with a fabulous prize.
Okay, so Brett, maybe you can just talk a little bit about the reason why you have to fundraise. I mean, why do you have to do this every year?
Yeah, well, absolutely. So, one of the things people don't know is that the Park City School District actually supports music at a very high level. And the Park City School District, Park City Education Foundation are huge supporters of our program. But as in most things at Park City Education, parents and students are really looking for a world-class caliber education. And so as much as the school district's able to support our curricular programs and our staffing and things like that, for us to be able to offer things like marching band and steel drum band and some of those things that happen outside of the school day and some of those things that really keep students engaged and interested in what we're doing, we need to fundraise to be able to offset the costs of staffing and instruments and things for those events.
Yeah, so how much do you hope to raise?
You know, Ricky and I were just talking about this. We consider the gala to be a success if we raise about $20,000 each year. And that's been very reasonable for us to reach. And so we're hoping to maintain that. We're kind of reaching this year, hoping to maybe make a little bit more than that. But, you know, if we can make $20,000 to $25,000, it's a good year for us at the Sweetheart Gala.
Are you taking the bands to any remote locations?
The bands are not traveling this year. We're still coming down off the high of being in France this last summer and how exciting that was for us and for the community. And so, we're not traveling this year. The money from the Sweetheart Gala this year will be used to help maintain the marching band from the competitive side for the fall season and all the things that are related to that.
All right. How many kids do you have in the programs?
The band, it's comprised of about 240 students, grades 8 through 12. And then there's about another 200 involved at Ecker Hill. And so the PC bands oversees all of the band programs 6 through 12. And, you know, Chris and I are lucky enough to teach at Treasure Mountain and at the high school. And then Kelly Wallace is doing such a great job teaching at Ecker Hill. And so really, I mean, the impacts of this are between about 400 and 450 students a year involved in band in this city. And so the impacts really help them out quite a bit.
Yeah. And in addition to the Sweetheart Gala, they perform where?
Oh, my gosh. The Varsity Jazz Band performs all over the place in this town. They've performed at different private events, different events for the Park City Education Foundation. This year, the only stuff on their calendar currently is the Sweetheart Gala and then region and state festivals, and then just our normal concerts. You know, and people always ask, how do we figure out where the bands are performing, when the bands are performing? We have a great calendar on our website. So while you're at pcbands.net buying your tickets, you can check out the calendar and figure out when the band is playing the next time. And, you know, the jazz band's featured at the gala, but the bands also have an incredible percussion ensemble and the marching band and wind ensembles and Dixieland bands, and those groups perform throughout the school year. So,
all right. And then the jazz ensemble's been working it, though, for the gala. Tell us what we can expect to hear. I mean, 3 hours, that's a lot of music.
It's a lot of music for a high school group to play, but they do it so well every year. Like this morning, they were working on Sing, 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 and In the Mood, and Jump, Jive, and Wail. And so you'll hear some of those traditional big band dance tunes. You'll hear some of the more common swing tunes of the era. You'll hear some more modern stuff. They have a couple of great swing arrangements of pop tunes from the last decade. They do some Michael Bublé charts. It's a huge assortment. We always have a couple of waltzes in there for our waltz fans. Just all kinds of different stuff.
Ricky, talk a little bit about, there's dance lessons involved in this as well, if you want.
Yes, there is. Those are organized by a teacher at the high school. He and his wife used to dance ballroom dancing at BYU. And those lessons, they do both swing and foxtrot. You can sign up for those at pcbands.net. And I don't recall the exact cost. It's not very high. There's four lessons in each four consecutive weeks. One has already happened this past Friday, but it can just be prorated if you would like to join for the remaining 3 weeks.
Okay, so yeah, dance, learn how to dance before.
Yes, yeah. So you know what you're doing.
Perfect, okay. And then just finally, I wanted to mention the fact that you've got a lot of the band students involved in making this happen, huh?
Yes, I think that's a really special part of the gala, that, you know, we talk a lot about the jazz band being on stage performing the music, but the rest of the band is also involved, both in the planning and at the event itself. So those silent auction items, those get donated by people in our community, and the band students go out and ask those in person. It's really nice when business people in our community can interact with the students when they ask for donations. And then at the event itself, the students work the check-in table, they make the coffee, they serve the dinner, they clear the tables. So it's a fundraiser that really involves all of the students. It's a really nice way for everyone to get involved and for the people in the community to see just how many students are in our band program and what they're doing to raise money for their program.
Okay, it's happening on January 31st. Again, tickets, pcbands.net. Anything else you want to mention?
No, thanks so much for having us on, Leslie.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. 8:53 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, this month's guest for the Free Park City Mark Monthly Lunchtime Learning is Audrey Lee. The topic of her presentation is Forget Those New Year's Resolutions. She'll be discussing the keys to lasting change. She joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So this is happening tomorrow, as it does every second Wednesday of every month at the Mark from noon to one. Why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I have a PhD in exercise sports science, master's degree in nutrition, and really my fascination is to take the science and make it practical. Last time you attended my presentation, I integrated that. This one is going to be a lot of hands-on, a lot of steps and strategies to help people make lasting change.
Okay, and you're saying forget the New Year's resolutions. Why? Because we know they don't last.
They don't really last. I mean, the statistics are against us. If we look and see New Year's resolutions, people usually fail within the 2 weeks afterwards. And so I was just having a conversation waiting here and was saying the gentleman's wife makes New Year's resolutions and is so stressed out about it because these expectations. So those are things we're going to talk about. Like, let's make realistic resolutions if we choose to make resolutions, but it's really focusing on goal setting. What are your goals and what are the multiple steps to take, and then take it one step at a time. That's really what the talk is about.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, you know, I mean, when you think resolutions, people are going to exercise more, they're going to lose weight, maybe they're going to stop smoking, you know,
right.
Not that that happens a lot here, but why? Can you talk a little bit about why that doesn't last?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the first one is goals are unclear. Those are so general. I'm going to get fit. I'm going to lose weight, but how are you going to do it? Are you looking at your lifestyle currently and where are there pieces that you can make immediate change and where are the ones that you need some assistance? And those are the things. It's like give people a little bit more assistance to make bigger change.
Okay. And so part of that, I'm guessing, has to do with scheduling. So,
yes.
Right. So if you want to exercise more, mm-hmm. you need to put that in your
right.
schedule.
So that's one. So scheduling it as an important appointment. You don't miss the doctor's appointments. You have reminders. You have those things. Schedule it just like that. And not only that, get even more specific. We will talk about the specifics. I will be exercising Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm taking the noon class at the Mark. If I cannot make it, have a backup plan. Okay, I know things get busy. We're working. We have other responsibilities. Okay, then I will take the noon class. Okay, if I can't make it, I'll do the 2:00. Plan ahead.
Okay.
Plan for success.
And then how do we do that with what we put in our mouth?
That's the other one. So I have some smaller steps. Okay, one, to eat healthy. Okay, well, what does that mean? Are you drinking water? So start off, are you drinking 8 glasses of water? Maybe spend 2 weeks to drink 8 glasses of water a day. Then move on to the next step. Do you eat breakfast? Maybe you don't even eat breakfast. Okay, well, let's look at that. Could you imagine having maybe a smoothie, maybe a small bowl of oatmeal? Okay, well, give yourself time to actually make those steps and take action. Schedule it. Not only schedule it, then you have to plan it. Okay, if I'm going to have oatmeal or a smoothie, you need to have those ingredients or food items in your home. If you don't have them there, you're not going to be able to achieve it. So then again, it's the next step. What do you need to do in order to ensure that success?
Okay. Again, it's happening tomorrow, noon to one. Everybody's welcome.
Everybody's welcome.
They'll walk home with what?
They're going to have a handout sheet, so it will have those specific steps and ways to keep yourself accountable. And then also, too, I'm a resource. If people need to reach out and have further questions, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, you do what? Private coaching? Is that?
I do. Private coaching, and I'm thinking because of this, I'm going to do a group coaching group. Like, hey, if you would like more, let's jump on it. Starting Monday, let's do this together. Let's work on our goal and hold each other accountable.
Okay, forget those New Year's resolutions and come to the Mark instead.
Yes!
Okay, Audrey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.